Today's show is brought to you by Of A Kind, an online shop for emerging design. For more information, visit ofakind.com.
I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
Hello.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Leyte Sue. And what do I do when I'm not hosting Word of Mouth? I am out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear here, and working with my clients, which include chefs, sommeliers, big brands, startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. Hello to the end of summer. Today, we kick off a brand new season of Word of Mouth, which, as you may remember, used to air 10 a.m. Eastern on Tuesdays. And starting today, you'll get your weekly dose of me with chefs, sommeliers, and other top food folks talking love, fear, business, pleasure, not just what's your food philosophy. You'll get that instead on Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. And the best part is, if you miss it, you can also download and listen to the show through iTunes or Stitcher. This is one of our word of mouth hashtag SF sessions in San Francisco and the Bay Area when I go talk to folks out there. And on today's word of mouth, we recorded on August 15th, 2014 in the Mission District. And I went to speak with Josh Harris. He is one half of the Bon Vivants duo. Shout out to his business partner, Scott Baird. They've got a bar. It's called Trick Dog. It's one of my favorites in the city, in this country, in the world. It is the everyman or woman's bar. It opens at 3 p.m. Kids are allowed. Later on, kids are not allowed. And their menus are outrageously themed. Some examples: a Pantone color wheel, a record album with real records in it. Imagine how hairy that was to create and to maintain. A horoscope menu where I couldn't help but choose my sign, Pisces, and then Aries, and then Gemini, and then Sagittarius, and so on and so forth. And right now the menu takes the form of a beautiful watercolor SF tourist map. And they just won Best American Bar Team this year at Tales of a Cocktail down in New Orleans. And they got 3 stars from Michael Bauer of the San Francisco Chronicle for being a cocktail bar, which is groundbreaking. Hey, Josh, welcome.
What's up? Happy to be here.
Wow, it was really hard to describe what you guys do. Did you see, watch me struggle through that?
You were really good at it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would be my elevator pitch for you guys at a cocktail party.
How many floors are we going on? 47?
I know. Rough. So I just saw you in Aspen, well, not just, but a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. You did the Rio Grande party.
We did a little Rio Grande pop-up. It was fun.
So tell us what that really means, because I don't know if everyone knows the history of the Rio Grande bar.
We had a pop-up bar that we ran in a brick-and-mortar space for about 10 months in San Francisco prior to opening Trick Dog. They overlapped by about a couple months. And the premise with the Rio Grande was, being on opposite sides of the river, we would serve agave spirits and American whiskeys and one can of beer and ZZ Top. And that is what we did until we had to close the doors. And it's a great thing to pop up because you can manifest it through decor. You can manifest it through music and energy. And it really is solely about having a good time with not really a lot of cocktails. It's like, you know, shots and beers.
Yeah, and you guys were pouring stuff down people's throats.
So we did that.
There were piñatas, a piñata, a pink elephant piñata. Mm-hmm.
That thing rolled with us all the way from Denver.
You guys got it in Denver?
We bought it in Denver, and we made it sit in the middle seat between Scott and Morgan the whole drive.
That's cute.
It was.
You guys got to know each other. Uh-huh.
Did we actually bash the pinata? Because I don't remember being there.
No, so the next day we then took it to Jimmy's second restaurant and we hung it from the inside of his tent using a ladder in the middle of service. And the next day it was obliterated.
Okay. Was there anything inside?
No.
Okay. No candy. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been up to a lot since Aspen. Mm-hmm. I have heard a lot about your party that you did at Tails with the watermelons.
Yeah. The annual Bar Fight Club. It's a raucous party that happens every year.
Mm-hmm. Bars all around the country competing for the...
Exactly. So the organizing body this year being the 86 Company, which is some friends of ours that have a great spirit company, they chose 6 bars from around the country. And each year it's the same format. And so simply getting asked to be a part of it is a great, it's flattering to come, particularly from your peers and your friends. And so we're excited to do it. And there's a structure where essentially a group of 12 judges who are also guys that are your peers and that we respect and
Amazing.
Have been to their bars and vice versa. They work their way around the room with an articulated rubric, essentially, that by which they're going to judge your bar. And so mm-hmm. we know what those things are, and you gear up for it. And they work their way through the room, and then you do your spiel. And then after that's all done, they open the floodgates of this venue, and like 2,000 people walk through the door. So then
literally 2,000?
Literally 2,000 people. And then you do that thing for them. What's cool about it is that it is actually set up so that you sort of build your bar to the best of your ability. So people are like driving truckloads of decor out and getting things made. I mean, it's like people go all
people get really like nerdy in that
it's
really
just,
fun way.
I mean, it's competition. So, you know, like we didn't go out there to lose. We're really excited to win.
Amazing. Okay, yeah, so the watermelon. Watermelon, sherry inside, a spigot.
Totally. So what we did, we had our 3 drinks coming out from behind the bar.
Okay.
We had 3 watermelons hanging in front of the bar that were filled with sherry and had spigots on them hanging in basketball nets. And then Scott made this incredible Ramus Gin sorbet, Ramus Gin Fizz sorbet with like Pop Rocks that did this whole thing.
Yum.
So it was all about like getting your drinks at the bar, getting some sherry while you were waiting, like having some tecates, eating the ice cream. And it sort of was intended to mimic some of the experience we try and create at Trick Dog, where mm-hmm. other parties we throw, where it's not just about the cocktail. It's like, we want to give great service and we want to make great drinks, but we also want to make it fun. We also want to give people the opportunity to be themselves and let loose a little bit. And in that little micro environment, we did that. And I think it was one of the things that worked towards us winning the really big flask full of mezcal.
It was hard for me to imagine what I just kind of heard from a friend what this party looked like with your watermelons hanging. It was hard for me to imagine until I saw a photo. We're going to actually grab that photo from you and put it on the show archive page so that people can wrap their heads around this.
Yes.
But what is so amazing is what the heck, how did you guys just, you woke up one day, you're showering or, you know, you were like brushing your teeth and you thought, well, I'm going to put sherry in a watermelon and hang it up. I don't get it.
The watermelons, that specific idea was Chad's, who's one of the guys on our team.
Okay.
And was one of the guys that was there and one of the guys that is, you know, gets just as much credit for being a part of our bar team as anybody else that's on it. And that was mm-hmm. great. And that mm-hmm. was his idea. And sherry is something that people think is cool right now.
Yeah.
And we think it's cool. And it's also one of those things that you can drink a lot of and you're not going to get super trashed, like
yeah.
drinking overproof bourbon. So
yeah.
you put wine in a watermelon and, you know, it equals a good time for us.
We just thought watermelon. I mean, he just thought watermelon, good vessel.
Yeah, great vessel.
Yeah. And so,
much easier to hollow out than a pineapple, holds more.
Now, watermelon tinged sherry. It has a slight greenish, yeah. watermelon-y,
yeah.
summery.
Well, I remember like, I opened up the spigot for one person, and they tasted it, because they're like, what is it? And I'm like, it's sherry and a watermelon. They're like, awesome, I'll have some. And I poured the spigot, they laid back, and I poured it in there, and they, you know, did one of these, wiped
yeah,
their mouth, and they were like, that's delicious, but, like, I don't taste much watermelon in the sherry. And I'm like, no, you misheard me. The sherry's in the watermelon. Like, oh, got it.
Okay, so it's mostly for
yeah.
as nature's
just
vessel.
A vessel, yeah.
It wasn't like you mixed sherry
mm-mm.
with watermelon
no.
juice.
Mm-mm.
Okay,
just sherry
okay.
and watermelon.
I'm into that.
Yeah.
How did you meet Scott?
Scott and I met in 2008. he was a partner in a bar called 15 Romolo. Mm-hmm. I did an event there. Mm-hmm. We met. It was like a fast friendship sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And very quickly after that, his entry into Romolo then transformed it into the Romolo that people know today.
Okay.
That is more of a cocktail bar with food. And I went to work there one day a week. And in the building of Romolo, we spent a lot of time together. I have a truck. When you're building something, you need to go pick things up with trucks. Mm-hmm. So we would drive around and talk about cocktails and jokes and life and girls and all the things that mm-hmm. guys talk about. And we thought each other were cool. And I went to work there one day a week.
We thought each other were cool. I think that was perfect grammar.
It could have been.
Maybe.
It was lucky, though.
That was very, that was a very well-constructed, yeah.
So in 2009, I got a consulting opportunity at a place. Mm-hmm. And I remember picking Scott up from the airport. And
that's so romantic.
I know. It's like, it is. He's like my heterosexual life partner.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was thinking that it would be cool to start this company. And I picked him up from the airport. And I was like, I'm going to drive him back to his house. I'm going to say, hey, I think we should start a company. And ultimately, that's how that conversation went, and he thought it was a great idea, and he said, we can just name ourselves and we'll get business cards and then we'll just be that, because that's what we are. And in a period of 3 months, we did that consulting job, and then we also got two more, one of which was Quince, which is a wonderful restaurant here in San Francisco.
Absolutely.
We helped do the bar at the new location that they had moved into, which mm-hmm. is the location that they're in now. And the second one of those was a job on the East Coast. And so in a very short period of time, we had done three things that made us like really, really excited and that were, you know, something that we, you know, could point to
high
as
profile.
Like work and what, you know, so it was all, you know, I'm not going to lie, like opportunities happen today, 5 years after that point, and it's still really exciting. And I think that at the point when you lose the excitement in interesting opportunities, it's maybe the time when you go do something else for a living. But particularly at that time, it's like, you're, you know, we're just slapping each other five. It's like, oh, we got this job. That's so cool. And blah, blah, blah.
Amazing.
So we did those things. And 6 months later, we did Pig and Punch for the first time. And not too much longer after that, we got the opportunity to do Trick Dog.
Okay. So wait, rewind. Mm-hmm. First off, how did you know that he was the one?
We worked well together, you know? It was, you have to think it's fun when you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be an alignment of sensibilities, particularly at that point in the life of your company when so much of what you're doing is being driven from a creative standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things that we deal with today as a company are much different than what we dealt with then. At that time, it was like, let's make a bunch of cocktails and see which ones we like. And now it's like, who paid the insurance bill? You know, it's a very different thing. And so at that point in the life of a company, it's like the purest that it will ever be, because it's
right.
solely based on like your creative synergies with another person.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have that sort of groundwork laid is one of the things that endures through the growth of a company and,
that's,
you know, evolutions as people, is that you know that you sort of coincide in those very, very basic levels of what we do for a living.
That's just like a relationship turning into a marriage or a post-marriage. You have to worry about the plumber and the babysitter and the
you're telling me.
Insurance, etc. Interesting. But the passion is really what keeps the
exactly.
passion, the creative juices that make sense together.
Exactly.
Okay, so Pig and Punch.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
It is. For us, at least.
So it is a events that you do all around the country, the biggest one being in at Tales of a Cocktail.
Mm-hmm. So Pig and Punch is a fundraiser, and it is a party, and it is an opportunity around which we build a volunteer day to help at charter schools that need help.
Mm-hmm.
It started because, being entrepreneurial, we thought that Tales of the Cocktail was an opportunity to throw a party. Saying, hey, like, these are two guys, they have a company called the Bon Vivants. If we had to define what our style was as a party, what would it be? We did, and then we set out to go do that. And what that was in a nutshell was less of the bow tie, less of the ice pick, less of the cocktail party, and more of like, let's bring people together to be convivial,
mm-hmm.
and we'll put punch in big trash cans and nobody will serve them. They'll just serve themselves and we'll give them food and there'll be music and that'll be it.
Yep.
And about 2 weeks after that, the idea popped into our head to get a group of friends together and go do some volunteer work in New Orleans, because New Orleans is one of those places that, you know, is sort of always top of mind as being a place that needs help.
Yep.
The thing that was the catalyst at that time was the oil spill. That mm-hmm. was the thing that had just happened at that mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. And so we called some of our friends and there were 11 of us that got together, and the idea was to go help with the oil spill. And of course, that's not what happened, and there was no opportunity for that. And after a couple phone calls got made, we found an organization that places people with volunteer opportunities.
Okay.
And where they placed us, coincidentally, was a KIPP charter school. And so through that serendipitous placement, KIPP has now become the group that we work with wherever possible around the country. Currently, New York and New Orleans is where they have the KIPP schools where we do this event.
Mm-hmm.
So that serendipitous placement is what led to our interest in the charter schools. KIPP turned out to be this amazing organization that we didn't know at the time. Mm-hmm. We saw them on 60 Minutes. We did a little more research.
Oh, interesting. And, okay.
Yeah, so we couldn't say enough about them.
So results.
Results. So that was in 2010.
Yeah.
We just completed our fifth annual Pig and Punch at Tales of the Cocktail. Since that first day, we've now grown to two other cities. We're launching a fourth city at Art Basel in Miami in December.
Mm-hmm.
The event series went from 11 volunteers and $1,600 raised to this last event being 200 volunteers and $44,000 raised.
Wow.
The event total across all events has now just passed its $100,000 mark of money donated to charter schools, and we're looking to take it a step further and turn it into a nonprofit foundation. We've got James Beard award-winning chefs partnering with us, and it's doing what we've wanted it to do, and that's bridge the gap between culinary and beverage, create a meeting place for people to come, let their hair down, have fun, eat, drink, talk with their friends, and in the process, raise some money for people that need it.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Ah,
it's fun.
Ah, my goodness.
It is without a doubt the thing that is the most personal to Scott and I that we've been able to get ourselves into. I mean, obviously we love our bar.
Yep.
We love the idea of making bars, but from the viewpoint of what are the things that you do in your life by which you'll measure your happiness, or the things that you want to share with your children when you grow up, and, you know, the lessons you want to give, it's something that's very personal to him and I. And the fact that we've been able to create something that people like, and it's been used as a tool to help other people, is like, you know, like, how can I do more of that?
And you once wanted to be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in life, failure is what launches us to the next level.
Totally.
So education is important to you.
Yeah, it was the thing that I wanted to do. My dad and my stepdad are both attorneys. I've been groomed Wow. through my young life with that sort of like dodgy, critical,
so your mom,
adversarial
mom,
thinking. Yeah, she obviously has
a
type.
She has
a thing.
Yeah,
she has a type.
Okay.
And I like that way of thinking. And there's a lot about the law that to this day really intrigues me.
I'm sure that's handy in the bar biz, the spirits.
It's helped out having to write a contract or two, for
yeah.
sure. But I applied to law schools after college. My major was politics and legal studies, and I did not get into law school that I wanted to go to. And at the time, it crushed me. And looking back on it now, it's very clear, because hindsight's always 20/20, that the reason why I didn't get into that law school was because that's not what I was supposed to do for a living. And it makes a lot of sense to me now. But
you would be so much less happy.
So much less happy. But the thing that's really meant a lot to me, honestly, is that the validation from my folks has come back, where it's like, oh, I totally get it. You, this is what you were supposed to do for a living. And
oh, your mom and dad and stepdad?
Totally.
They
all
get
just
it
like,
now?
This is, yeah, like, you know, my dad has always made a comment that's interesting to me, that the thing that's attracted me to the hospitality business is very similar to what attracted him to the law in the mid-60s.
Interesting.
And he said the law has changed from when he started practicing it. And he said hospitality industry and law the way it used to be are way more similar to each other mm-hmm. than law the way that it used to be and law the way that it is now are to each other. He's like, now it's more about billable hours. Now it's more about like the machine of the legal industry. And there's all
right.
these different types of law firms. And he's like, generally, he finds it to be much less about people and interaction with people.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I love the human interaction element of the type of law that I practice. And he's like, that's obviously one of the things that draws you to the hospitality industry.
Mm-hmm.
So we're way more alike than we thought.
I think that's a sweet moment that you. Me too. Were they at first kind of like, what the heck? You want to be a bartender for a living?
My dad had always done a little bit of legal work for restaurants, and so he got it. I think differently. My mom is always, you know, as most mothers are, it's like, but you need to have health insurance. And so, you know, it's like my mom was a little bit more of a slow burn, but now she like comes into the bar.
She does?
Oh yeah. Like both my, I grew up in San Francisco, born and raised. My folks both still live here and they're both remarried. And my mom comes into the bar when I'm not in town. My dad comes into the bar when I'm not in town, which to me is just a testament that they actually like the place.
That
they
want
to come there with their
hilarious.
Friends. They'll be like, oh, I went to Trick Dog last night. And I'm like, that's awesome. You know, you just like went, not because it was like me or I was there, but because you enjoyed it, you know?
So they are cocktail drinkers.
My dad drinks scotch. So no, he's not a cocktail drinker. Okay. But he likes a good bar.
Okay, he likes a good bar. Yeah. Which not a lot of people... You know, we're so, the cocktails are so wild and crazy and the menus are so wild and crazy. I'm happy to hear that you also offer food and beer and wine.
It was always important to us from the beginning with Trick Dog that we were more than just a quote unquote cocktail bar. We wanted to be a great drinking place. We wanted to be a great neighborhood establishment, like all those sort of... all those expressions that we hear a lot of, like, you know, a social gathering place and all that, you know,
watering
whatever.
Hole.
Yeah, exactly. And all that stuff is true, but not necessarily how we would define it. We wanted to be a place that people would go and do all of the things that they would do at a bar. You eat, you drink, you can drink wine, you can drink sodas, you can drink water, you can have cocktails, you can chit-chat with your friends. Like, whatever those things are that people do at bars, we wanted to have them do those things or be able to do those things at Trick Dog. We didn't want to dictate their experience as much as some other cocktail bars that we've seen around the world have done. And not that we don't like that style for them or in general, it's just not necessarily our style. And we wanted to create a bar that was the type of place that we wanted to go to. And the fortunate thing that you have when you open your first bar, and when Scott and I opened our first bar together, is that it was going to be the truest expression of our sensibilities. And it was really important. You channel so much passion and so much of like all these thoughts that you've had building over the course of your entire career. Like, if I was going to build a bar, what would it be like? And then all of that stuff gets like thrown into this hopper and ultimately has to get distilled down to like a concrete idea that gets manifested into one place.
That's creatively so gratifying. It's like in a silly version of that for me was when I did a piece about the hipster dining phenomenon for Heritage Radio. And it was like, I finally got to say these thoughts about this one thing on my mind, and it just was like this release.
Totally.
And
totally.
So you guys have a wonderful outlet for your creative energy. I want to know how the hell you come up with the menus. Like, what? They're so fun. F-U-N.
There's been an immense amount of collaboration when it's come to the menus. Morgan, who you met at Aspen and down the street, also plays a huge role in the creation of the menus, whether it be from concept or graphic design standpoint. He weighs in heavily with the menu thought process. The Pantone menu basically occurred because there were a ton of Pantone guides around in the process of us building the bar, because we were painting and there was all these color swatches around. We knew that we wanted to create a menu that was not an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. We knew we wanted to have it be like a thing.
Mm-hmm.
What that was, we had no idea. And it was like one of those aha moments. And in creating the Pantone menu and getting the response to it that we got, sort of it set the bar high for what we had to continue to do. And so...
So you always plan on having it switch up at every...
We knew 100% without wavering that we were going to be, every 6 months, we changed the menu. San Francisco is one of those places that doesn't have four traditional seasons. It is like a bi-season, bi-annual seasonal change sort of place. And so that combined with the mentality of, we believe it's important that people can build relationships with drinks, and that they can get the opportunity to work their way through a menu, find certain things craveable, try an easier to consume cocktail and work their way to one that's maybe more challenging or a more aggressive flavor profile. Mm-hmm. And if you're constantly changing your menu all the time, you don't give people the opportunity to do that. And in San Francisco, we've been such a market, fresh, driven place for so long that we've seen a lot of turnover with cocktail menus because it seemed like the thing that was Californian or San Franciscan. And letting our cocktail menus run for a little bit longer, we felt was more in line with how we wanted our guests to be able to interact with
the menus. It ran longer than you first thought.
No, meaning like we knew that's what we wanted to do from day one, and that we knew that we didn't want to be like the people that change their menu every week or did only dealer's choice based on what you get at the market or change it like every 3 months. It's like we wanted to let it run for a while. So it's sort of like you get the spring and summer thing and then you get the fall and winter thing.
So how did you guys, what was the inspiration for the describe for us the record one. That was my first time at your bar.
So picture like a photo album.
Yeah.
In the photo album are sleeves. Mm-hmm. The sleeves are opaque brown paper, but there is a hole in the center. Mm-hmm. So when you drop a record, a 45, into it, you'd be flipping through. You could see the label that's on the 45 through the hole. It is by definition a record album, and people store records that way. So we got, 50 vintage 45 record albums.
Oh my gosh!
And then we bought a few hundred records, 45s. And then we chose which songs we wanted to call certain cocktails, because all of the cocktails on the menu were like She's Gone by Hall & Oates or, whatever.
Yeah.
And then we made sure we had that sticker. We put the sticker into Photoshop or into Illustrator. We added into that information on the sticker the ingredients on the cocktail, reprinted them back as stickers, took all these other records and slapped the stickers back on them, and then put them all in the record menus, and there you have it. And the thing that was the most important thing about the record menu is that we learned about user-friendliness, things that we did not learn from the Pantone menu. Mm-hmm. And that conceptually, the record menu was really interesting. It was visually interesting. It made people really sort of excited about they've done something new and what's going to be next. But with the volume of people that come through Trick Dog, particularly on the weekends, it highlighted the necessity of having an extremely user-friendly menu that was also visually interesting. So when those 6 months had gone by, we took that information and went to the horoscope menu, which was much more user-friendly.
What was hard about the record menu?
Ultimately, the print was really small. Uh-huh. It was a cumbersome item.
Yeah.
If you hold it upside down, the records could fall out. It's like there's things like that. So on a Tuesday night when you're sitting at the bar with your companion, it's awesome. You can look through it. It's cool. You can hold it. You can talk about it. It's cool. But on a Saturday handing somebody that, it was like, look through. I'll just have an old fashioned.
Oh no.
So sure, we still sell tons of cocktails, but I'm making it seem a little bit more drastic than it was, but that was the information that we gathered and then used to inform what the next menu was going to be.
Okay, so horoscope. What was the eureka moment?
I think that was Morgan's. And it was great. And Morgan actually did all the graphic design on that menu as well, mm-hmm. and it came out beautifully. I love the way that it looked. And the thing that was really cool about the horoscope menu that we didn't anticipate was that the way that most people use the horoscope menu is they came in, they got the menu, they realized what it was and how it worked, and then they turned the dial to their sign.
Uh-huh.
And if they read the cocktail that was their sign and there was nothing on that cocktail that they particularly had an aversion to, then they ordered that one.
That is hilarious.
And it was cool. And
that really helps people to just, instead of trying to figure out what they already drink, oh my gosh.
So it made that whole process like...
easy.
Interestingly enough, so much more streamlined. And then people work through other things and they go through.
They're like, I want to be a Sagittarius.
Exactly. The other thing that was cool about that menu is that the whole sort of joke about what's your sign is inherently playful and it's inherently flirty.
Oh, completely. And
at the end of the day, if you're going to bars, like there's got to be like the playful, flirty boy-girl thing or boy-boy or girl-girl in San Francisco or anywhere for that matter.
And dog,
so,
man.
Yeah, exactly. So like having that injected into the conversation was cool. And we've tried to do things like little add-ons to the menu. Mm-hmm. And so for that one, the coaster was Trick Dog on the front, and on the back side, it said name, number, and sign. And we had little pencils out so you could take the thing and write it and like throw it down and, it's like it was cool.
I wonder if any marriages came out of the
it's possible
your menu.
Bars tend to do that.
So right now, I went in a couple nights ago. I had to poke my head in to experience the latest and greatest. Mm-hmm. SF Tourist Map.
Yes.
Who came up with that one?
It was a collaboration, again. I think that this one happened with the combination of a couple different ideas. Mm-hmm. We had an idea before that was to do a postcard-themed menu.
Mm-hmm.
And to pick vintage postcards that would in some way reference the style or the feeling that would be evoked from that cocktail. So it's like, hey, if this is a postcard with a photograph of Lake Como from the 1950s, that in some way that references what that drink would be,
mm-hmm.
and that we would write them on the back and it would be all sort of cute, like, hey, I'm having this cocktail here with all these things, wish you were here, sort of thing. And Morgan was really keen on not wanting all of our menus to be thought of from the perspective of having to be a book. And so...
Interesting. Yeah.
So...
Fantastic.
We had all sort of been really excited about maps recently, and Morgan and Scott had this idea about a tourist map, and so they sort of all came together, and it was all sent off with a narrative to a friend of a friend who lives in Boston, and he did the original artwork for it,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome to sort of loop in somebody else as well. Did it all on watercolor. And
oh my gosh, that's beautiful.
And Morgan did all the layout for it, and... the way that we added back in the postcards is that all of the coasters at the bar double as a postcard.
Got it.
And so each postcard has the imagery of one of the landmarks that's mm-hmm. used on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And if you write on the back of each postcard, you can then drop it in the mailbox before you leave, which we have mounted to the wall inside the door.
Amazing.
And our bartender who comes in the next morning will then take them all out. We pay for the stamps on all of them, and we drive them, walk them down the street to the mailbox, and we mail them. And it's really fun. And people are doing it. And that's the thing that makes you really happy, is like you pull all these postcards out, and it's like there's like some really sweet ones. It's like, hey, like I'm having a drink at that bar that we used to go to all the time before you moved across the country, and we miss you, and here you go. And then there's other ones that are just like... like fuck you know, it's like sending it off to their buddies, and but they like legitimately want it sent to them, and there's an address and a return address. So
really good doodles, I bet.
Totally drunken great doodles. And then obviously on each one, you know, there's like the recipe for the cocktails and our hashtags and all that sort of stuff. And it's fun.
Are they square or round?
They're rectangular. They're okay. The shape of a postcard.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like like actual rectangle, not square.
Yeah, they're about like that.
That okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't get my hands on one of them. It was pretty late night the other night when I would actually like to grab one of those maps. I'm gonna frame it.
Awesome.
How cool is that? Yeah. It's an actual watercolor artist.
Totally.
Huh. So congratulations on the outstanding bar team.
Best American bar.
Best American bar team Spirit Awards.
Mm-hmm. It was a huge honor for us to win this award. As it would have been with any award that we won. But to recognize Trick Dog for its team
mm-hmm.
was something that was very personal to us. We were fortunate enough to be able to have a handful of our team there at that to accept the award with us. When we accepted the award on the stage, one of the first things we did was acknowledge the rest of the team, who are the people that at that moment were making our bar go around the way that it does the other 365 mm-hmm. days a year. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole idea of the team. And it was a great moment to be recognized by your peers. I mean, it was just as simple as that.
Like, yeah.
We couldn't have been happier. And you know, I hate to use that sort of flattered and humbled thing. I think that those words get thrown out a lot, but really, like, it was that.
I'm going to cut that part out, by the way. Cool. Yeah, but, you know, yeah, I appreciate that. I wonder how maybe it's like a word of mouth, like a voting thing, how they know that your team is so collaborative.
There is a very, very involved and built out judging structure.
Mm-hmm.
I am one of the judges for this last one.
Okay.
If you have an association with anything that's being nominated, you're not allowed to vote in that category. Okay. But I voted in other categories for other people in bars on things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It goes on for a number of months, and you have to have like gone to the bars if you're voting for bars, and it's usually made up of groups of people that have the opportunity to travel a lot for work and that have been to a bunch of places. So, yeah.
I'm seeing Michael Bauer, Michael Murphy tonight,
mm-hmm.
and I am, I guess, surprised at his very favorable review of your bar because it's loud.
He's like a food critic kind of restaurant.
Yeah, he's the, you know, that San Francisco food critic that. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you're not alone in that thought. We were surprised as well, as I'm sure that there were a lot of people that were. And we were, we were floored.
So what happened? You saw him in the bar one day.
Well, so by the standard of what we know, he has sort of a routine by which he comes in at a certain point after the opening and does a number of visits. And
he came in once.
And then he came in again. And the first visit, we were like, well, he's probably just like having dinner here and having some drinks. And then he came in again, and we're just like, oh my God, is he going to review us? Like, he can't review us. We're a bar. Like, we're just a bar that has food. And then he came in again, and we're just like, oh my God, we're definitely getting reviewed. We need to, like, write him a letter and tell him we don't want to get reviewed.
Yeah. Because zero stars and, could really.
Yeah, totally. We're just like, this is like, not, we shouldn't even be in this conversation.
Yeah.
And so then we didn't write him a letter, and he did review us. And when the review came out, it was
3 stars.
It was 3 stars. And so, you know, obviously those star ratings are reserved for people that have are regarded in a certain way by him, and that's very highly. And the thing that made me the most happy about that review when I read it was that he articulated certain things about what we believe the relationship with food and drinks are and what the relationship between food and our space is that we didn't tell him or he didn't like read it anywhere.
Yeah.
It was just something that he independently picked up on that was, you know, in many ways verbatim for how we would articulate the role that food has to play in that specific environment. And that he articulated that the importance of the program was to play a secondary role to cocktails and the aggressive, bold flavors that one puts into their mouth,
mm-hmm.
and does to their palate when they're drinking cocktails, the food had to be a support of that. And that was very true.
What's an example of one of your dishes and how they...
Well, I mean, at the time when he did that review, there were several snacky items,
mm-hmm.
and there weren't very many larger items. We have the Trick Dog, which is our namesake. It is a rectangular hamburger on a hot dog bun, which is something that was from like a...
Rectangular hamburger.
It's a burger in the shape of a rectangle on a hot dog bun.
A long rectangle.
Mm-hmm. So that's the Trick Dog.
I need to try that.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Okay.
And that's obviously our best-selling item. And our fries are... they're very good, and I'll let you sort of take it from that point, but they're very good.
Okay.
And we have a kale salad, which is very good, and there's a lot of kale salads out there, but this one's very good. And those three items, now that we've just changed from our original chef, Chester, to our new chef, Logan, those mm-hmm. are the three items that are going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Those are like Trick Dog classics. Mm-hmm. They won't go anywhere. And he, you know, sort of cited all three of those in his review and, mm-hmm. and loved them. Also, at the time, I'm trying to remember back, like, we had this, like... We had a killer hummus of like porcini that, you know, was inspired by something that one of us had tasted somewhere and sort of crudité. And we had radishes with Campari butter and smoked sea salt. And so like nothing that was like really reinventing the wheel, but all things that were done in the style and with the care that you would find at like a fancy restaurant, which is obviously where our chef came from, was that school. And then you just put it into a context that's like, you know, as Scott would say, delicious, not precious, and is easy for you to share with your friends and is quick pickup times and pretty sets and,
yep.
you know, all that sort of stuff.
What time do you stop serving food?
1:30 in the morning, 7 nights a week.
Oh, that's just such a relief, yeah. You know, coming in from...
And there's not enough of that around.
New York, yeah. NOPA. Yeah, and then
exactly.
You
like
guys.
NOPA and then right. and NOPA. You know?
So he wrote what did he write? write in his defense of his review on Monday morning.
So on Monday morning, after the review came out, he wrote this blog post online that was 3 stars to a bar, and then did this, you know, again, this really wonderful sort of either explanation or defense of his decision to review an establishment of our type, whether you mm-hmm. want to call it a bar or a restaurant or, you know, whatever you would want to call it, and sort of going into it more, which I appreciate because it was something new for him. Like, he has traditionally not reviewed establishments of our type. And we've always felt like there should be more cross-pollination between food and beverage. And we wanted to stray a little bit more towards that side of, like, being, like, that hybrid. Like, maybe somebody could consider it a restaurant. Maybe someone would consider it a bar. And when you find what that middle point is, mm-hmm. where you truly don't know if it's a restaurant or a bar, we wanted to be slightly more on the bar side of that. So you walk in and you know it's a bar, but the food is of the quality and care that you would get at a restaurant that's in the conversation of these types of places that we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think that with Trick Dog, we've done that. And with Trick Dog, like, I can't say that we have an equation. We did what felt right. And then at the end of the day, like, you roll the dice. And if people like it, that's awesome. And people have happened to like Trick Dog. And that makes us really, you know, like, oh, we did it. Like, we did the thing that was us. And we stuck to what we wanted to do. And people loved it. You walk in there and there's people that you don't recognize in there. Like, that's the best feeling. Your friends are always going to support you, but when it turns into that thing that gets its life of its own, you know, as somebody who pours something creative into a business, you can be happier.
Yeah, your mom and dad go into the bar when you're not in town.
My dad likes to stand on the landing of the stairs, so he's like sort of 3 feet higher than everybody else with his top coat and his scotch and sort of like watch everybody, and then he'll grab random strangers by the arm when they come down the stairs and like tell them stories about shit. And then I'll be outside smoking a cigarette and they'll be like, so we met your dad. Like, I played soccer too when I was young. I'm just like, oh my God, like, that's so embarrassing.
That is hilarious. Yeah. That's adorable.
One of the things that we've noted and have been particularly proud of with Trick Dog is how people of different age ranges and sort of styles and types have engaged in Trick Dog without any sort of tension. And that you can see like a 25-year-old kid who lives in the Mission in a tank top with a bunch of tattoos and maybe like a skateboard down by the bottom of his stool, sitting next to a person that's like the age of my parents in their 70s with their friends. And, you know, somebody's drinking a glass of wine and somebody's having a Tecate and a couple people are taking shots. And that happens seamlessly and in harmony. And it's like, not a thing that I've seen in so many places. And I can't say that we did anything like consciously to do that. It's just how people have responded to the space. But it gives a really wonderful feeling that's genuine. And I think, you know, the music is one of the things that contributes. Like, we play Motown and soul. It's like, who doesn't like Motown and soul? I mean, it's not like what everybody puts on their Pandora station, mm-hmm. but it's sort of like you don't like not like it.
All of this awesomeness, despite the fact that your menus are off the rocker.
Totally.
We're sitting here in your office. Mm-hmm. It is very interesting. And there's a lot of odd stuff on the shelves. Can you describe the shelf over here?
Totally. So behind us, lots of antique light fixtures that are in various stages of repair and disrepair and working order.
Another pinata.
Yeah, another pinata, some Pig and Punch shirts, 3 antique national cash registers that I'm sure will find their way into retrofit in a bar one day. We had the fortunate opportunity to get a very long lease on this incredible old space and do something that felt like we were investing in this neighborhood. I also live around the corner.
Okay.
We have this place, we have the bar, and we believe in what's happening in this neighborhood. We want to be a part of it.
Oh, so this is what old space.
Yeah, this, I mean, one day this could be a restaurant, one day it could be a shop, one day, you know, like our friend does her print pressing over there, and we have a 20-year lease here. We don't plan on going anywhere anytime soon, and having this amount of space enables us to fulfill our dreams. Antique flea market buying habits.
So what is your dream job?
I love the old stuff. So if money wasn't an issue or I was going to be switching careers, I would love to be like a salvage guy that got to go into these like incredible old buildings and like pillage them for all their copper skylights and their, you know, their light fixtures and things like that. And there, you know, there are companies that do that and we buy things from them.
So yeah, Josh is like, my dream job is to collect junk. And I'm like, I do. I see the junk. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful junk.
Yeah, one man's trash, you know.
Thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today on Word of Mouth on Heritage Radio Network.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming and giving some love to San Francisco.
Tell us what's coming up for you guys that we can participate in.
Portland Cocktail Week.
Okay.
Swig and Swine, October. It'll be awesome. And we're involved in a new project here in San Francisco, Café du Nord. And it is an old and incredible bar that's going to get a little bit of a facelift and some drinks and food. And it's going to be a really fun place to come hang out.
And social media information, I'm at Leitihsu, Leitihsu, at Heritage_Radio, hashtag WOMSHOW, WOMSHOW. That's short for Word of Mouth, the show. Facebook.com/ Word of Mouth with Leitihsu. You guys are at
BonVivants_SF on the Twitter. We are at Pig_N_Punch on the Instagram for the Pig and Punch, which is a really fun feed to follow. And we are / the BonVivants on Facebook. And we have our own Instagrams if you find us too. Those are pretty cool.
Oh, your name?
Josh with a bunch of underscores and the BonVivants.
Okay. Yeah. And then BonVivants.com.
Scott's the same. Yeah,
check them out. It's quite the destination. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And that was Josh Harris, one half of the BonVivants team, with his business partner, Scott Baird. They have a bar called Trick Dog in San Francisco in the Mission District. This was Word of Mouth on Heritage Radio Network. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.